recording. So, Aidan, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Aidan. I'm Director of Creative Programmes at Nuffield Southampton Theatres. So, my job is overseeing our produced, presented artist development and community engagement work in Southampton. So, we are an Arts Council funded organisation that have two theatres in Southampton. And we produce about six pieces ourselves on the main stage here. We've also got a studio and do lots of artist development and community work.
Cool. I'm Beth. I am currently at Nottingham Playhouse. I'm the artist development producer there. Only for 2 more weeks. So Nottingham Playhouse has got a 750-seater and a 91-seater studio, and we produce a variety of work. And over the last year, I've been set up an artist development scheme to look at how we support and develop artists in a bespoke way that really supports their career.
Hello, I'm Nick. I'm the head of theatre at Pleasance. So we have 3 venues in our year-round base in London. So we have a 250-280-seat main house. We have a 74-90-seat studio space, and then we have a 54-seat comedy work in progress venue. And then we have 35 venues at the Fringe this year, so ranging from 1,500 seats to 50 seats. We produce, co-produce, or associate produce about 50 theatre and children's pieces a year across both sites, and then quite a big stand-up comedy programme as well, and we produce about 10 stand-up comedy shows a year.
Great, thanks for the intros. Just to say that throughout this, you can just pitch in with questions at any time. We will have a more designated questions bit at the end, but please do just put your hand up, like, say whatever you want to throughout. Starting with you, Nick, what are the particular challenges of producing work at Pleasance?
Money. Where do you find the money? So it's kind of, we're not a regularly funded organisation, so we kind of have a commercial based model. It's, well, we're saying Pleasance is a charity, but we have a commercial model in Edinburgh whereby we have to kind of raise all the money all from box office. So the Pleasance is one of the few venues in Edinburgh that doesn't run its own bar. Bars. Great, the Edinburgh University Students Association, thank you very much. But we need to raise all of our kind of money from ticket sales. So last year we sold £6.5 million of tickets, roughly 70% of which goes back to the artists. And then out of that 30% we have to build staff and produce all our shows out of. So finding money is going to be a big challenge. Similar in London actually. Grants for the arts, fundraising, private donors.
And am I right in thinking that you're trying to do more new work rather than?
Yeah, so in
and what's
London,
the model that you're
yeah, so we were
there?
Primarily a receiving house in London, so that we would take in other theatres, other company shows, and we'd usually have limited involvement in kind of helping to produce that or helping to raise the money. This year we're kind of co-producing 3 shows, including one that we co-produced with Ellie earlier this year, and associate producing another 4 shows, which usually means that we are pretty heavily supporting the fundraising elements of that. So whether that be kind of ghostwriting or the majority of the work on Arts Council Theatres, using our charitable status to allow companies to apply for foundation grants, or also just trying to increase the numbers of kind of rich, wealthy people living in London that want to give some money away to the theatre, and then being able to divide that money amongst the shows that come into the building in an equitable way.
So you're working with a lot of, I would say, predominantly young companies, aren't you, coming into the building and taking work there. What would you say these young companies need in order to successfully bring work to
the business? I think everyone rushes to get their shows on. Kind of have an idea for the show and go, I need it to be on next week, and it'll suddenly want it to be kind of relevant anymore. When actually the more time you plan to take to build kind of the productive producing function of the show, the more successful the show tends to be. So we tend to now program almost a year in advance for kind of small studio shows, so that we've got 3 shots with each show to get a grant for the project grant from the Arts Council. We've got time to do some custom foundation bits, knowing that like 1 in 10 of them will be successful. And we've got time to run a series of kind of small-scale fundraising events. But yeah, I think lots of people are really worried. And I kind of understand the impetus, which is as soon as you made the work, you kind of want people to see it. But I think the quicker you try and rush that piece in front of an audience, it usually means the less resource the show is, it usually means the less developed the show is, and the less you've had time to really think about who the audience for that show is. That's where the Arts Council released something recently about looking at relevance rather than quality as one of the key indicators for work they want to fund. I think it's something that often producers think about as well. Relevance just is, who's the audience and why they want to see it. And often it's kind of the last thing we get to. Mm. A lot of producers always say, oh, my show's for everyone. Nothing's for everyone. Like, pick two or three groups, and if someone else sees it, great. But the more specific we can be and the more thought we put into that, then the easier it is to find the audience for that show, find the money for that show.
Yeah.
And to the audience is probably who's also going to fund it.
Yeah. Beth, I think you nodded when Nick was talking about rushing and the time frame. Is that something that you...
Yeah, I think so. I think good work takes time to develop, and it takes time to mull it over and to really think about what it is you're trying to say and how you're trying to say it. And I think often there's a real pressure. I think people often compare their own journeys with another company, and I think trying to find your own rhythm as an artist and as a producer and as a kind of project takes a little bit of nuance and understanding, but it's really important that you don't have to... the way that you make your show will be totally different from the way somebody else makes theirs, and your time scale is your time scale, and you need to make that work for you. Yeah, I think often there's this real urgency, which is great because it has a real energy and drive behind it, but it can be detrimental to actually trying to achieve what you really want to achieve in the first place.
And I think just building on that, though, it is almost an industry creative pressure, because like when we do stuff in our mid-scale venues, you're so focused on the press now.
Mm.
And because like ultimately for some shows, with well, word of mouth ultimately sells a show, but reviews do make a massive difference in terms of sales. But the mistake that I think is always made, a show is, from my point of view, always in development. Like the moment it opens,
yeah,
the work isn't done. Like shows, in my opinion, are always at their best towards the end of their runs, when they can develop more and more. Like, so shows are never finished. In my opinion.
What do you find?
For the work we produce, we're often producing, curating that in-house, and ourselves, especially on the mid-scale. We have a studio now, which we've only had for the last year, because we've been rebuilding this year. I think one of the challenges is learning how to navigate buildings, because buildings are quite big beasts, and knowing who the person to contact is and who the right person is hard. And we're always constantly looking at how can we be more accessible, how can artists engage with us. But if you don't know the way the buildings work, that's tough. But to develop that more, I'd say find a building that you can that you feel aligned with you artistically, but also more and more there are more and more venues outside of London, and if you're from a city outside London, find your local theatre.
Definitely.
Like, we are desperate to find local artists from there. And they do exist, but they don't necessarily know where it exists, so it's just ensuring that it aligns. And obviously you always want to like get the interest of the artistic director or the chief executive, but they're not going to be the person that you've got that relationship with and who will apply to you. So in most of the like bigger subsidised arts companies, there should be an artist development or a community engagement contact who you can begin to build a relationship with.
So building on that, a lot of what we probably have to do at the moment and will be doing for the next few years of our career is pitching ideas and projects and plays. What, in your view, just starting with you, Nick, are the successful pitches that you've had, and the ones, because I know you get a lot, right, and particularly for Edinburgh, what stands out to you as a good pitch and a good approach made?
In whatever the pitch is, I think it's really important to be clear what it is you want. Like, we receive hundreds and hundreds of emails that you say, I'd like to let you know about my show. I'm like, hey, don't know where is your show? What do you want? And to be quite specific about, like, I want you to come and see this show because we want to transfer the show. I'd love you to come and see the show because we're working on another piece that might be really interesting for you to look at in a year. Or we'd just like you to come and see the show to begin a personal relationship if we'd like to do something for them. I think kind of the more specific it is, the better. And just ask what you want. Because theatre can only say no, and organisations can only say no, but if you don't remember what it is that you need, it's really difficult to be able to help. I think the more specific, I had someone in my mind a couple of days saying, would you come and see this show because we want to take it to Edinburgh? I read this script because I want to produce it in your venue, and can we just have a coffee because I want to find out a bit about kind of how you work with directors? Cool, I'm going to do two of those things, but at least we're really clear about what the artist wants and what we can offer. And it's just looking for that.
Yeah.
Similarly with shows, just be clear about what the show is and what you wanted to do. A lot of invites just come and see the show, and I wish I had that kind of time. But if you tell me why, then there's a really good chance that we'll make that time, or someone in the team will make that time.
I don't know if you're receiving pitches on a regular.
Yeah, so we have different ways at Nottingham Playhouse. There are different kind of windows and different opportunities that you can engage with, that really are all just different pitching opportunities, actually. And it's been quite interesting. There's a couple of things that are becoming increasingly clear, and one is that if you're sending scripts and sort of more text-based work, there's how often people send a marketing copy rather than a really clear outline of the story. And loads of work is talking about thematically, and it comes across like a university essay, and like, I don't care. I just want to know what the story is, who it's for, why, and roughly sort of the theatrical language that it's going to be presented in, and it's really sort of nuts and bolts, basic ABC, bullet point it. So I think, there's a thing about clarity. And the other thing, I think, it's really useful the more you meet artists at things. I'm really interested in building that long-term relationship with artists. So when somebody sends you a pitch out of the blue, that's wonderful. But often I will prioritise artists that I see at things, that I usually stay in the bar with and chat to people and get to know them. And I can contextualise who they are, what their work is, and how engaged they are in the kind of broader artistic ecology of the region and nationally. And that's really useful, is kind of developing those relationships, and you get to see work more clearly in the context of the person presenting it.
I think just because we don't have a new a script reading department and it's split up between, I think it's very rare that if we're sent a full script with not much context, it will get read. Where we're far more likely to take an interest if it has a really specific email. So someone, so I think it should be at your venue for this for these reasons. And I think you've got to be careful not to make summaries into marketing copy, but concise one-page pitch for a show that gives you an artistic idea of the story is the most important thing, an exciting one-page pitch. And it's a real skill to do. It's rare to see a good one, because either they end up looking like a flyer for a show or they end up being a long synopsis. But pitching the tone of the show, why you want to make it, what it's about, concisely is really key. And again, I think it's very rare that we're pitched a specific project and then that project happens. It's all about the relationship with the artist. So that, and there would be it would be meeting the artist that might lead to another project. I think the important thing with that is that one project always leads to the next project, so even though you put your all into the project you're making at the time, I've always found it's about the way it leads into other things, because I put so much in certain projects before that would do these things and then that'll be it and that'll be done, but that's never the case.
Cool. I want to talk a little bit about Edinburgh, because that's probably the Edinburgh Fringe is probably something we're all going to interact with at some point if we haven't already. And we've got Nick, who obviously programmes effectively the whole of Pleasance at Edinburgh.
Theatre side,
yeah.
Don't get
caught on me. Beth, I know you're producing up there this. I'm just saying, Edinburgh is, as we all know, an incredibly arduous and expensive venture for producers, and the strain of it is enormous. So I'm just thinking, why are we still doing this? Can you?
Do I need to make the case for the Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Look, it is really expensive and risky to go into Edinburgh. It's also really expensive and risky to produce a show anywhere, and the cost is relatively equal. The only real significant difference, and I will say this on the mic, is that certain funding bodies, national funding bodies, don't invest in the Edinburgh Fringe where they do invest in other places. And that is the fundamental difference in the risk factor, is there isn't state subsidy available for Edinburgh. But it is the world's biggest shop window. About 50% of our shows this year have either been on tour or gone on tour. 15 of them have been optioned for film, TV or radio development, with 100 kind of actors that come out, haven't got agents. It's the one place in the world where you'll get kind of bookers, makers across every creative medium in one space to be able to pitch your show. You're not pitching your show up against 4,000 other shows, but that kind of ratio and density is still really special and unique. And also just for the chance to meet with other artists that you may end up collaborating with in the future. But look, it is expensive and it is risky, but it's like I always say to companies, the money is out there. A rush and a time thing. We spend most of our time in their show notes to the Executive Fringe, travel to the world, basically telling companies not to come to Edinburgh this year. And the advice always is, are you ready? Do you have kind of all your ducks in a row?
That's such an important point. And for me, that's maybe like, I'm just like feeling older, but that's where it's changed a bit and shifted. So, like when I finished university 7 or 8 years ago, we could just take something up and ready to it, but partly because it wasn't as expensive as it is now.
Yeah.
But secondly, like, it didn't matter as much. It was where you tried stuff out and where it seemed. But from my point of view now, Edinburgh's almost like the shop window for stuff that's finished and ready. But there are, I would argue, there are lots of opportunities for developing work before getting expensive.
Yeah. Do you have anything? Not really. You covered it. I suppose I get with the programming hat on, and it's an amazing opportunity to see a lot of work and to get familiar with loads of artists and shows that you don't get to see otherwise, and you know, you'll see 7 shows in a day, which is quite a marathon. It's extraordinary to do that and to get,
I do feel like the industry is beginning to adapt to that, so I think the Vaults model in London is good because that does put less risk on companies, because I think often they work on splits and you can do stuff, but, and it is very competitive. I think more and more from my point of view, coming, you see the shows that are good at Vault, you're shooting them and they go to Edinburgh and get a platform. I think more and more venues outside of London are providing festival-y opportunities. So we've recently launched something called the Make It So Festival, which is specifically for like Southampton, Hampshire-based artists to just put something on for a night or two and just give them the space. And I think more and more venues are beginning to do that.
Yeah, we do a lot of that in the East Midlands, actually. So Nottingham Playhouse runs Amplify Festival, which is a week, or sort of more than a week, of work from artists in the East Midlands. In Good Company, which is another sort of regional organisation that brings us come together, they also run Departure Land, which is specifically to showcase work before it goes up to Edinburgh, and that takes place in July. Curve do Inside Out Festival in the autumn, again, often with companies that are creating work that will at some point make it up to Edinburgh. And then it was interesting, there's quite a lot of collectives, so I saw it down in Plymouth, and Plymouth Fringe Festival got set up as a way of kind of providing platforms to artists from the southwest, and again, lots of work goes there before it goes up to Edinburgh. The Party Somewhere Else, which is a female collective in East Midlands, they sort of started creating a platform for a female non-binary network. So there's loads of opportunities, actually, to kind of do the sort of small-scale festival thing, and really cut your teeth in it, get used to doing tech in no time at all, do the changeover, be in space sharing it, and do all that sort of stuff before you take the big risk with Edinburgh. And there are increasing opportunities for that.
I think it's a bit of a myth that shows come from nowhere in Edinburgh and like, don't take off. Like,
no
shows.
It's a lovely story.
Yeah,
but
you chart the journeys back. Like, you can begin to predict the companies that will take off this year and be discovered in Edinburgh probably because they've been working for 5 to 10 years and building those relationships.
Yeah.
An interesting one about why people go to Edinburgh as well. Because it's no longer, it's exactly, it used to be a preview festival, and you used to be able to come up and test work, and you used to change your show over the course of a month. But you need to be ready to have the Guardian in and preview day one now. So why you're coming to Edinburgh, I think, has changed. I've been really clear about what you want to get out of Edinburgh. Because it is expensive. If you can afford to go on a really expensive holiday, bring up something that's not ready. But if not, really think about what you want to get out of it.
That's growing, that's great.
So it's a weekend festival, but primarily, so I depend on what days you do shows.
It's one of the festivals to get your work seen and put on app.
I don't know.
I'd assume it'd be a similar-ish financial model. Brighton's also not cheap to stay in the weekend. But yeah, they do shorter runs, so it's a little bit more similar to a Vaults model. I think you can do a full month run there, and a lot of the work is kind of on the weekends.
Can you explain a bit about your programming model in Edinburgh?
Programming or money model?
The money model.
So the Fringe kind of works, and the other thing to mention about the Fringe is there is the free Fringe, and I think we often forget that is an viable alternative to kind of going into the kind of some more kind of formal Fringe program. But there's kind of two primary models that venues or operators use in Edinburgh, and one is kind of a pay-for-slot model, so venues like Space, Green Sides. It's a fixed cost for that slot, so you know it is up front, you pay that cost up front, and you take all the box office, less kind of any commission charges. The model that the majority of venues use, the majority of the bigger venues, so ourselves, Underbelly Assembly, Summer Hall, the Trav, Gilded Balloon is kind of usually a split model, so it's usually, for us it's 55-45 if you're non-VAT registered and 60-40 if you are VAT registered, and that's offset against the minimum guarantee, which is a minimum amount that we expect that slot to make across the course of the month. And then some venues will call out a facilities fee, so we send you a facilities fee. And then there's a marketing contra for us, which is £500 plus that, and then there's fringe registration fee, which goes to fringe. Marketing contra goes to create something that Pleasance Assembly, Underbelly, and Gilded Balloon. We're a group called EdFest, and we make our own separate brochure that goes in time order to help highlight our shows. The free fringe is almost pretty much entirely free. There are some charges depending on venues, what you're doing. But yeah, they're kind of the three main kind of financial models to bring work there. The difference, the main difference between kind of the split base, kind of the venues I've mentioned previously, I'm trying not to say the word big four venues, is that we will always prioritise long run, so full festival work. So if you're looking to bring something for a week, it's unlikely it gets into one of the programmes of those four venues or travel somewhere, or unless it's quite limited in the programming process, like there's gaps in there. Venues, it's really hard to make a show work financially. It takes forever to kind of get that word of mouth going and kind of break out of that cycle. So I thought last year you could do it in 2 weeks and it would be okay. Mm-hmm. All those shows are fucking loads of money. So this year we're not doing anything like that. Mm-hmm. A short run.
Short runs at all?
We have a couple of British Council showcase ones, but that's it. The rest are all doing pretty much the whole festival. Comedy's a little bit different.
I'm going to open up the questions from the floor.
I think it depends what you want to produce. So I live in writing, you work, so I'm always scouting for directors and writers. They're my most interesting people to work with. But it's completely different for other people. But I think you're always looking to build creative teams, and they're your key relationships and instigators. I think on a general note, I'm always looking for people that like to get things done, like to make things happen. I think, you know, I'm a bit over being faffy and being like, oh, that's a lovely idea. And I'm a bit like, okay, what's that look like? Excuse me. Like, dates, ideas, what's your timeline, what are you thinking? And I don't mean that in a really kind of horrible way, but just I want things to get practical quite quickly. I want people to thought through what they're doing. I think sometimes theatre can be quite romantic. And it comes lots of romantic stories about how you make it and how somebody arrived out of nowhere and this younger artist who's so successful. And basically, it's just really hard graft. It's amazing, but it's hard graft. So I look for grafters and people who get things done.
Donors and businesses increasingly having quite a private or commercial investment into shows or subsidies and support. And there's some really successful companies at the moment. Most of them have, over the course of 4 or 5 shows, cultivated not huge, no one's going to buy 10, 15,000 pound checks, but 10 people that will invest £500 or donate £500 into a show is £5,000. I think it's building those relationships, and it's also kind of been the clearest bridge if you do want to go into a kind of commercial sector, which is very much investor-led. But even in the kind of subsidised and small work stage, a network of people that are passionate about the same kind of thing that you're passionate about, that you can cultivate over a series of shows.
Yeah, I think not being afraid to draw that network of people who've seen your work, that you know, like, and keep in touch with them. And don't think, oh, I shouldn't email those people that donated to the crowdfunder 2 years ago to invite them to the next show. I think just always reach out because people don't mind. I mean, they will tell you they do. So, yeah, that would be my
thing. I think it does all start with a script or idea. So it ultimately is all about that, to say, people you want to make and work with. Because all the contacts you want. And I think also very few producers are just money makers. People. I was such a like risky game. So yeah. It's so important to like, cultivate those. Like, the more donors and potential sources you can have, the better. But it's so easy to just lose sight of the script and the idea and the stories. But that is the main.
You spend a lot of time with a creative team, so you have to really like them. this would be nice people to work with because you will spend a lot of time with them, and you want to invest in them, you want to be excited about their work, and you need to be able to talk about it to other people and get excited about it. So I think mistakes I've always made of working with people where I'm just not as excited about the work, whereas stuff that's really easy instinctively, you're like, I'm really passionate about this thing, it's amazing, and people can just hear your excitement, and that always works well.
Mm-hmm. It's also been clear with those collaborators about what the role of the producer is. Mm-hmm. So lots of producers in the room, lots of the artists in the room that come to me and say, oh, I need to find a producer, and I'm like, can you define what you mean by a producer? And it's someone to find the money and do the admin. I'm like, that's not a producer. This is why you don't have one.
Yeah.
But somebody like, and so if you're an artist in the room, it's like, you know, thinking about how you make the show and how you can open up space for a creative kind of input from the producer, which means they'll be more excited. But and similarly, if you're a producer, being really clear with artists and collaborators about I'm not just the admin monkey for this show, the diary wrangler, and but that you want to have a kind of creative say in the show and feel engaged in that process as well. And so I think we all need to kind of think back about what we think the role and the job spec of the producer is, and whether actually our process is allowing us to engage with the best people.
On the show that the show that Nick and I co-produced back in January, we gave some notes after maybe the first or second preview, and there was a sort of surprise from the creative team that we were giving notes, wasn't there?
What would have called it mild panic and shock.
Yeah. And perhaps we hadn't made our role clear enough from the start, but you should, for the non-producers here, you should expect in a particular way, but
in the commercial sector and subsidised sector. In the commercial sector, producer's the boss, the producer gives notes and the changes are made. Especially since we've got a big musical in now, and the producer comes in and says, I don't like that scene, and the director goes, cool, when are we to make you like that scene? But then in subsidised sector, the power balance is slightly different. It's really interesting looking at the two sectors and around who has power in those two kind of sectors and how when it shifts in the process as well.
When you said about admin and fundraising, because that's a challenge I'm facing currently with, like, you don't want to do different things to your admin. And I'm finding that the early career companies is actually a lot more efficient for a lot of the time for the creative team to do the admin, because it's the whole kind of delegating and informing somebody else about the entire show. So I'm wondering if there is, in your experience, there's a particular point in a theatre company or an artist's career at which they should be getting on the producer. Because quite often, at the very, very beginning, I've been saying to you, it's just you can do it yourself.
That's a really interesting question. I think it depends on the show. There are some large and demanding shows coordinated, if you want a better word, from the start. And I would also say that given infinite money, all shows would have a producer from the very first second. But as you say, that's not always possible.
I think a big part of it comes down to funding, because if you want to go for certain types of funding, it does help if you've got infrastructure. So slightly different, but the first thing I did after leaving university was producing shows myself, but like the film and stuff with artists that I knew. But the other thing I did was I set up a company in Reading called Reading Rep with something called Paul Stacey, and we set it up as a pool chat straight away, which in hindsight was complete madness, but it was exactly the right thing to do for that company because we were based in one place, we were making work for a specific group. We were lucky that we had a residency at a theatre. And because we did that, it meant we got Arts Council money straight away and we could apply to the trusts and foundations and various education funds. That is an extreme level and weight, but I maintain it was the right thing to do for the type of work we wanted to create. So instead of, like, you're part of this, like, say there are three of you making work together, who all, like, you're in the show, you direct the shows, you create the shows, and you should also be producing the shows. And as I say, the point you want a producer is the point where you can't do it, keep doing it yourselves and together.
Yeah. For a show that I'm currently producing, I produce it with one of the performers, and that's what we've agreed. I've written that down, and it simply makes sense because one of the performers has been involved in the show since it was first thought of, and there's just knowledge of the show and its requirements and its potential that she has that I'm gaining. Two of us together are sort of a very good team because she can speak about the show in a way that, however, you know, however well versed I am in it, I'm never going to be as brilliant at talking about it as she is.
One of the ultimate models to look at is Mischief Theatre, who've done The Goes Wrong Place. So they were a group of drama school students from London, trying to make their own work. 3 years working in call centres, they did various pretty average shows on off West End in London. Did a show at the Old Red Lion, which was originally called The Murder at Habersham Manor. That is essentially the first half of the play of Goes Wrong that exists all over the world today. I think it was a pleasant in its journey of growth. And I think the first thing there, they produced it themselves as a team. They're about 10 core members, but for the first 4 or 5 years of that company, they completely produced it together. And the moment they actually got it produced was when Kenny Wax, commercial producer, that took them on and signed it up. But they still are the ones that running that company, creatively. So they've got real sound business heads, and it's only that was a long way into the journey they got producer.
Good question. I don't know if that's the right thing.
I took me a long time to be able to go, oh, I'm actually a producer, because I think because I come from a directing background, and you just suddenly realise you pick up a skill set. And I think sometimes, particularly early career, there's a little mystery around producing, and there's also a thing about permission giving, about are you allowed to make this, are you allowed to do this, could you do it? And it's one of the things I've done quite a few times is work together with like a collective or formed a group of people, and between you sort of work it out as you go through and you do a bit of a journey. I think particularly if you're living regionally, it's a really useful thing to get together with a bunch of other artists and go, okay, what do you want to create, what do you want to happen, what's not happening here that we need to happen? Is it that's how various festivals have formed for providing platforms, but also various shows have formed after people coming together and kind of skill swapping and then learning off each other and getting things wrong and working it out. And actually I think it's a really useful way in to get your head around it, and also because if it will help you decide if producing is a thing you really like and want to do, or go, actually I don't really love this bit of it, but you really understand it when you do work with a producer. You've got a real understanding of what they've got to do and you really appreciate their role in the project. I'm a big fan of just self-starting and just making things happen and having a go. I think it's the best way to learn.
There's so much to do as a producer. You can't forget that no one's going to be perfect at all of it. I hate trying to talk people to get money off them. Like, our associate producer's great at it. And it was really lovely. We would have 3 producers on the show. There's downsides to having 3 producers, but there's also lovely bits in that we kind of played about strengths and not have to be excellent at every single kind of functioning stage of the process. And it's really nice about it. The collaborative model rather than the producer being kind of one super-powered, multi-skilled, never sleeping, never eating kind of entity.
But I'd argue most shows don't have just one producer. And it is about finding ultimately a team whose skill sets complement each other, and that's kind of always more than one person.
And also asking for help when you don't know something. And that's a really good point to get to actually the building. Buildings are really happy to give you stuff, but I think they've actually think about being specific. But we've got, imagine there are 3 producers and they're working together as a trio, and partly they're looking at how to find a producer model that works around being parents, which is really interesting, which the Arts Council approached to them. And they're like, we're missing a bit of skill set. And so they approached us and said, can we have some time? And the chief exec gave them, you know, half a day going through and looking at sort of some of the specifics around producing and buildings and sorts of stuff. And I think you can ask for time and mentoring and support. And if you're specific about it, about, like, this is the bit I don't get, you can pick up things that you don't know.
I would say on that note as well, form relationships not only with audiences and potential donors and stuff, but if you have a friend who's an accountant or who is a lawyer, like, ask them for advice, because producers would all, particularly independent producers, I think always need the accountancy skills. Sometimes you'll need someone to pay for a contract for you. Like, form those relationships and don't be afraid to say, will you give me an ounce of consultancy in something that is like very easy for you, and have like 2 comps to the show in return, and like
Let me try and think of something a bit more specific.
We're lucky because we get the data for our audiences so that we do mine through that. You know,
what kind of data?
As a building, we get everyone's postcode, and so you do postcode analysis. I know that's hard if you're an independent artist, but it's the same principle. Like, if you have 40 people in the audience, like, talk to them, because they'll give you feedback on the show, and you'll get a sense pretty quickly, like, they'd like the show. And also, it's often not... With donors, I often find it's the secondary connection, so it's someone will, like, give you, like, £50 or something, and they might know someone else who, like, is better connected or wealthier in that world, so it's not always about, like, the primary, like, source, it's about following up those leads and talking to them, because, like, they'll know
new people might work. Yeah, I think it's kind of building up that network of who people are, and everyone you meet was donated to, trying to find out a little bit about who they are.
I'm just going
to
explain what Nick just said. So CSR is corporate social responsibility, and increasingly businesses of a certain size and above have to have basically a remit to give money to charity, and they designate someone in the company to distribute it. And if you can find that you can write to, that you can invite to the show and get excited about your work, then that is a really good way.
It's trickier to get commercial money, but it's got to be really specific. Last year, Fringe Simpsons, the musical, and one guest who sponsored the show. So when that kind of comes together in a certain way, then that's easier. Via which has got quite a bit of sponsorship for an eco play we're doing through actually an economic, for the environment consultancy company. But I knew someone in that company because I directed a community show about 6 years ago, so it's kind of that thing about the connections. Mm-hmm. Had I not done that community show 6 years ago, I happened to be Candy Chandirche and HSA, I run this environmental economics company then, and I didn't actually go to her for money. I actually said, oh, look, we're doing this play, who are the people in this space we need to talk to, and she gave me a list.
And tell them how much you can do for a grand, because a grand is often not very much money. You say, you know, I can make, I don't know, I can pay two people a week for that, they would be excited.
That's true, it's about making a story, isn't it? It's about creating a story that people can buy into the story, and that comes with, like, I hate budgets, but it is all about budgets, and quantifying what things cost, and why that's exciting, and how you can be part of this thing. It's about a story. You bring people in on the story rather than hard ask. And I think the other thing is that in theatre sometimes it's very easy to get caught in a theatre bubble where everyone you know is an artist or connected to the industry in some way. And I would say really work hard and protect time outside of it and cultivate relationships with nothing to do with this. Partly for your own mental health, but also in terms of, like, just broadening the scope of your work, not just financially, but in terms of the story and content as well. It's not to get too, like, hooked into the theatre bubble.
The other thing I'd say, even the Arts Council project funding can seem like a minefield, like, if you do get that for a project, that can often be a bit of a game changer, and, like, it's like a stamp of approval when you're then going to a building or going to individuals, because, like, the Arts Council are one of the two biggest funders.
Success rate, and then it's one in four, the best funder in the world for its success rate.
And if you can, like, apply, if you're based outside of London,
outside London, do not apply in London, apply anywhere. Based on your postcode of submission, not by the project.
Any other questions?
I'm just about to move, having just set up artist development in Nottingham Place, I'm about to move to Perth and do artist development and new work stuff over there. Part of it is up to the building, actually, how they handle that structure, and obviously your personal relationships, but it's about how you do the handover. So I keep a file on everybody, not in a creepy way, but just to keep my head straight of, like, all the artists I'm working with and the conversations we've had. I think I've got 2 days with the next person to sit and go through that and talk through. And then who I'm replacing over at Perth, we literally met most of the artists either on the phone or in person to kind of do that handover. However, if the building haven't done that and sorted that out properly, then I think it's just approaching the next person, introducing yourself, and kind of contextualising the work done in this event.
Yeah, there are a couple of things I'd say is use it as an opportunity and find out where they're going first, because that could like, take loads of time. But when people are in buildings, they do often create their own roles, so it's not often, sometimes they're not directly replaced, which is it would be a nightmare for an artist, like, what do I do now? So I'd argue both like patience and persistence is the key, because like sometimes you can't replace someone straight away, but that doesn't mean like give up on the building and the building's given up on you. It can take time, but I think that buildings, like people in buildings do also talk to each other, so I think if you're on one person's radar, that almost certainly means you're on other people's radar within the building as well.
Mm-hmm. We've got time for one more question.
In terms of like compensating to charities, if you already got the administrative on the topic and things like that, there is something that is maybe interesting for charities or for and I might just go and start making files. So if you, there might not be a direct, not a nasty answer, might be, oh, you might be able to introduce me to that person, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a win. How can everyone you meet in a professional context do one thing to help?
Yeah, in making that ask in the right way and in different ways. Any last thoughts before we wrap up? Cool. Well, we're going to bring it to a close because we've got another panel starting at 11, which is comedy and politics. So do come join us for that. And thanks for great questions, great audience for our first comedy festival panel. And thank you very much to these guys as well.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Great. Hi.
I am Aiden.
Have you been in touch?
No.
Oh, right.
So you basically
Yeah.